When David Dennis was a kid, his father, a civil rights activist, showed him his FBI file. Pages and pages, photos, documents. And that's how David learned that what some people at the time considered a conspiracy theory was, in fact, true. The American government did spy on the Black Liberation Movement. Well, today, David's a journalism professor at the historically black Morehouse College and author of a recent piece called Why Black People Need Conspiracy Theories. Charles Monroe Kane asked him to explain.
You know, I remember in Living Color had a character who was in jail and he was spouting off these theories about the government and, you know, putting drugs in black communities and who really assassinated people. And they were called, you know, they're considered conspiracy theories. And so within black communities, it was like you're embarrassing us if you start spouting out these theories. Right. However, you know, with the Black Lives Matter movement, with footage of actual police cover-ups, with footage of black people being killed and it going against what police officers say happened, we're getting an understanding that we need to have a healthy discernment of what's actually being told to us and what actually happened. So these things that used to be called conspiracy theories are not so much conspiracy theories anymore, as much as we need to be more sort of aware of what the possibilities are.
You know, it's interesting. I'm just picturing, like, you know, when you think about conspiracy theories, you always think about the Illuminati, right? A bunch of white guys, cigars, sitting around a table, and they're like making nefarious plans. I mean, do you see like a bunch of dudes sitting around a table saying, let's put more black people in prisons? Or is it just like individual people are racist and this kind of comes out naturally? Because I think there's a big difference.
That's the thing that I always think about. Like, I don't know if there are, you know, these brilliant billionaires scheming and sitting down, like you said, sitting down playing poker, thinking about how to ruin black people's lives, right? But, you know, destroying black communities, violence against black people, marginalizing black people is so ingrained in American culture. That's, you know, been here since America's been here, right?
Right.
So I don't even know if you need to necessarily plan for that together to go to that goal, because that's been a goal of this country since the very beginning.
You know, it brings up just an amazing question for me. And I hear you talking. It's like, is there a difference between systemic oppression and a conspiracy theory?
No, not really. I mean, a conspiracy theory is sort of one of those made up terms at this point. You know, it's being used to disregard somebody's actual concerns about something that happened. And this really became clear to me when Sandra Bland was killed, right?
Right.
She was pulled over, she died in police custody, and then they showed a mugshot of her. And there was all of these theories that, you know, she was actually dead in the mugshot and that she had died hours before. They were sort of put as quote-unquote conspiracy theories. And, you know, from what I understand, they were not true. She was alive at the time that the pictures were taken. However, we need to understand that anything is possible when it comes to this. The more we learn, the more we're learning that these things are more possible, that something happened in that jail that led to her death. And the first of all, she shouldn't have been in jail in the first place, right?
Right.
So we knew this. Like, we talk about these things amongst ourselves and we know this, right? And there's been a feeling that you can't repeat these things in mixed company because you look crazy.
I was reading, I was on The Root, their website, and I was looking at the top 10 conspiracy theories for the African-American community. And one of them really, really struck me. And it was from the South. I think it was in Georgia. So I think it's where you are right now, where that the KKK was putting poison in soda pop that black men were drinking. Now, this has been disproved numerous times again and again. But still, it's a pervasive belief. What happens when it goes to that level, when it starts to caricature people as, I don't know, I hate to use the word, but as gullible? What do you do with that?
I remember there was a shoe, I forgot what shoe it was, that the KKK was putting these shoes in the black community. I think it was like Adidas or something like that, right? And so, like, there was this was a belief that happened at the time, right? But what happens is when these things get proven untrue, then there's a belief, oh, well, none of these conspiracy theories are true, right? But what people need to understand is the reason why we can believe these things happen, right? If you can believe Tuskegee, then there's a belief that the KKK is poisoning sodas for black people. Like, these are based on proof and things that we know actually happen.
You know, you're a journalism professor at a traditionally black college, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you, you know, you got some idealistic student, you know, she, he's 19 years old. They're journalism students, right? They're going to talk to you about truth. What do you say to them?
As a journalist, you have to dig in for, you know, for the truth, right? But also as black people, you come into a story sort of understanding your own truth, right?
Yes.
So I tell them there are two ways to approach a story, right? One is I'm going to find out what happened. I'm going to talk to the people. I'm going to try to understand and, you know, research to get to the bottom of this, right? And the other way to write a story is F you, I'm right. And so that essentially comes from, you know, if I'm doing a story on a personal experience being, you know, followed by police, right? Which I have lots of personal experience with that happening, right? When I write that story, there's going to be a lot of anecdotal evidence from people who say that I'm making that up, right? Or right. that I'm being fallen victim to my own conspiracy. But I know from 31 years of experience in this country, I know exactly why I'm being followed by police. So F you, I'm right, right?
Right.
And so when you're telling those stories, you can tell them in a way that you understand that there are people who have their own version of the truth that will try to dispel your personal experience, but your experience is your equity when it comes to those stories.
It's funny. It's almost like you can slap conspiracy theory on a label of something to discredit it.
Yeah, that's become the problem. And that's sort of infected the black community because, like I said before, you can't say these things against mixed company. When you're around, you know, white people, when you're at work, you can't say, hey, the war on drugs is a war on black people, right? Or you say the prison industrial complex is about continuing slavery into, you know, the 21st century. Like, there was a stigma around that stuff. And I think part of it is Twitter and social media. Now we have a community of people where you're no longer the only black person in the room wherever you go because you have, you know, these people on social media who have your back. So you can say these things, you know, with a little bit more shortness and pride and information. So, but, you know, that conspiracy theory label is just another way to silence black people, which is something that, you know, this country has mastered the art of trying to silence black people.
It seems like for white people, there's like a difference. The Barack Obama's birth certificate is such a different conspiracy theory than crack was introduced by the CIA in LA in the 1980s. They're like a different idea even.
Right. I mean, Alex Jones got an hour-long NBC special.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, and his, you know, and he's mastered the white conspiracy theories, quote, you know, like the idea of that Sandy Hook would never happen. And he's been given an hour of airtime on one of the prominent channels in the country. But we don't get that space. We don't get to go on TV and say, this is why drugs are in black communities. We don't get to do those things in the same way that white people with these same theories get.
Yeah, you're not getting your hour with Kelly, are you?
Right, right.
Hey, and if I just met you and we're sitting in a bar or a coffee shop and we were chatting and I asked you if you're a conspiracy theorist, how would you answer that question?
I would say that generally there's really, for black folks, there's no such thing as conspiracy theories, I don't think, because there are so many conspiracies against black people, you know, so there's no such thing. I do believe that there is a history of things going on against black people that we need to investigate. Some of the things I may hold dear, believe to be true, may be wrong, but if they're wrong, there is a reason that I believe them. And there's something along the line that happened to cause me to believe that this is possible. Like, okay, so I'm married, right? I have my wife. And so if I leave the house, right, and if she's always thinking that I'm out cheating or something, a lot of chances are that there was something that I did in the past that leads her to believe that that happened, right?
Right.
So there's something in the history of this country that has allowed us to believe that we are vulnerable and susceptible to this violence from this country, and we need to investigate why we are allowed to believe those things.
David Dennis, he's a professor of journalism at Morehouse College, and Charles Monroe Kane talked with him.